Hello, everyone. Coach Eric Vigansky here. I'd like to welcome you to the Leadership Podcast Series, hosted by myself and Coach Nicole Dixon. Coach Dixon previously played Division I basketball at Mercer and has been coaching high school girls basketball for 26 years. Coach Dixon has won 8 state titles as an assistant at the Wesleyan School and 3 as the head coach at Holy Innocence. Coach Dixon was a court coach for the 2025 USA Basketball Women's Junior National Team in April, during their mini camp in Tampa. Currently, she coaches at Girls Preparatory School in Chattanooga, Tennessee. Coach Dixon is a Team USA Gold Camp coach and also coaches at the prestigious Snow Valley Basketball Camp that runs every summer in Iowa. Coach Dixon also staffs for the Elite NBA Academy every summer, which develops future NBA prospects from overseas. Coach Dixon has had the privilege of coaching and developing over 55 college athletes. Some of these young women have played professionally in the WNBA and overseas. She has touched the lives of many more as she has helped her student-athletes realize and reach their potential on and off the court. Coach Dixon is also extremely passionate about developing leaders and strong women. For those who don't know me, my name is Coach Eric Vigansky. I played basketball collegiately at Clarkson University and professionally in Europe for 7 years in Spain and Denmark. While playing, I also served as the head sports performance coach at Hattersleeve Sports Academy and coached basketball at the Elite Sport Youth Academy, successfully placing players on the Danish junior national teams. After my playing career, I earned my master's degree in clinical sports and exercise medicine at the University of Nottingham in England. I have owned and operated a company called Athletes on the Rise since 2018, a sports performance and basketball skills training company dedicated to developing complete athletes to compete at the next level. I've also coached at Snow Valley and have run AOTR basketball and sports performance camps and clinics in Costa Rica, Denmark, China, South Korea, and throughout the USA. This winter, I'm with Coach Dixon at Girls Preparatory School, serving as her assistant coach and learning a ton about the ins and outs of on-court coaching at the high school level. I have a passion for bringing together knowledge and resources from different spheres to develop successful athletes and people. Okay, hey, Coach Eric Vigansky here with Coach Dixon and our special guest, Coach Gardner. Okay, welcome, Coach Gardner.
Oh, thanks for having me. Great to be here.
Yeah, happy to have you on here. So, Coach Gardner, before we get started with our questions that we have listed here, if you would give a brief description of your coaching experience, and then we'll talk briefly about how you and Coach Dixon know one another.
Well, I don't know if I can do a brief one, but I'll go as fast as I can. played ball at University of Georgia. I was a graduate assistant at Georgia and became a head coach at age 23 at Anderson Junior College. I don't know who I thought I was, but became a head coach at 23. We went 24-4 and I said, this is the easiest job ever. So, that fooled me though. Then went to San Diego State as an assistant coach, head coach at Austin Peay, head coach at Arkansas, assistant coach at Florida, head coach at Mercer, assistant coach at Florida, and now I'm on a sabbatical right now. And yeah, I know Coach Dixon because she's one of the best coaches in the state of Georgia, or I know she's in Tennessee now, but when I was at Mercer, at Holy Innocence, won state championships, just good people, and I like good people.
Amazing. Amazing. Well, thank you for that. So, yeah, Coach, to get started with, you know, this, the whole purpose of this podcast is to talk about leadership, right? And so if you wouldn't mind, in your own description, like what is your definition of leadership and what are its core tenets?
Yeah. Leadership is, you know, anyone that, you know, can create followers or, someone that is working to better themselves so that others will follow them. And, you know, Coach Gardner comes to mind for me because she, in my opinion, is one of, you know, the greatest leaders that I've come across in women's basketball and just in general. She leads by example. She doesn't, you know, set out to necessarily be someone that's called a leader. And I think that's the definition of a leader. You know, you lead by example, in what you say, what you do. You know, Coach Gardner, I went to Mercer University and, you know, enjoyed my time there, mostly sitting on the bench and doing a lot of work in the science building. But enjoy my basketball time there and my coaches. And, you know, Mercer had a lot of really good coaches after my coaches, you know, left. But something was different about Susie. And I started noticing in the gyms that I was coaching in, I started noticing a lot of orange and black Mercer's colors. And I hadn't seen a lot of Mercer coaches in a while. Yeah, yeah. And just by the way her coaches interacted, the way she interacted with coaches, high school coaches, giving them just time and respect and showing up, I started paying attention to what she was doing and started getting a lot of amazing feedback from her players and from the coaches, her assistant coaches at Mercer, and just the professors at Mercer in general. And I think because of the way that she leads, she had a lot of success, and not just success with all the championships that she was able to have at Mercer and kind of restore that glory, so to speak, at Mercer University, but her student athletes. I know some of them, and they speak very highly of her. She's demanding, never demeaning, and she cares about them as people. And, you know, leadership, in my opinion, is caring about people and hoping that they, you know, they see that, they feel that.
And then Coach Gardner, what are your thanks for that, Coach Dixon, and Coach Gardner, in your own words, you know, definition of leadership and its core tenets there.
You know, I had an index card that I taped wherever I was, whatever my coaching stop was, that said, leaders never have an off day. And I would put it underneath my desk because I would see it every single day as I, even though whatever kind of problems I had had to solve, whenever I got on the court, I knew that I had to be the person that didn't have an off day. I couldn't bring my problems to the court. And that kind of has stuck with me. And I think I've evolved as a leader for sure. Cause you know, I played in Tennessee high school basketball for a demanding, very demanding high school coach. Didn't give a whole lot of compliments. I played at Georgia for Andy Landers, no compliments at all. And I think early on, as I said, when I was 23 years old, all I knew was that. And I've had to change my style, you know, my leadership style. I don't really try to bring attention to myself. I think it's interesting to watch the social media aspect and some of the, especially, I mean, I just watch women's basketball more than anything. But some of the coaches out there just trying to draw attention to themselves. And I just kind of was just more like, okay, I'm just going to do my job, put my head down and try to make it work. And I think having this year off and, you know, having a little reunion, I got fortunately into the Mercer Hall of Fame this year. And a lot of our players came back, and then just them telling stories and them being adults now, you know, and hearing from them now as adults, how much perhaps I've touched their life, which they didn't realize at the time, mm-hmm. or especially former players or former assistant coaches that are now head coaches that say, wow, I didn't realize this went on behind the scenes. So I think maybe just my style, I pay a lot of attention to detail. And that's what players continually say to me now, or coaches. And I also think it's important not to act like you're the biggest person in the room, like do the little things, take the bags off the bus. You see a piece of trash on the floor, pick it up, like just those little things, and people will notice, and maybe our players will do the same.
Got it. You said they didn't really know what was going on behind the scenes. And this is, again, an open question for both of you. What goes on behind the scenes? Like, what are leaders doing behind the scenes that a lot of people might not know about?
Coach, I'd love to hear from you.
Well, I think it happened to me as well because, like I said, I played at Georgia, and then I went straight to graduate assistant at the same school that I played for the same coach. And I remember, I remember me being in shock. Like, what? I didn't know. I thought we just played ball. I thought we just coached ball. And what is all this other, you know, scheduling games or ordering the uniforms or getting the hotel rooms and, you know, managing the budget and making sure that when the cafeteria is closed at Christmas, that they have food, and just, and then all the, I don't want to say problems, but all the issues that happen within the administration or with a player that's having a problem, you know, those types of things. And I think that's where, when people are just assistant coaches, not, I don't want to say just assistant coaches, but when people are assistant coaches, how many people say 12 inches over is so much different? They don't know that. I have a former player and former assistant coach. She played for me at Austin Peay. She was my assistant at Mercer, got her first head coaching job last year, and she's blowing up my phone thanking me for the things that I instilled in her that she didn't really know at the time. A lot of my graduate assistants, because I put a lot of our graduate assistants at Mercer had a lot of responsibility that you don't have at the bigger schools. And they are very successful where they are now. And they thank me all the time about demanding perfection, you know. And I think that there is a joke going around between the former graduate assistants about me, how they had a manual about how to work with Coach Gardner that I found out about like 10 years in, right? But it was like they handed it down to each GA because they knew that I wanted it to be perfect and they didn't want that other person to go through the learning curve. And so just something as simple as that is just, not, I don't want to be like, I don't want people walking on eggshells, but I want people to try to be as good as they can be.
Got it. Coach Dixon, is there anything you want to add on that as well? Or should we step forward with
this? Yeah, just echo, you know, I think, obviously, very different levels between high school and college. But, you know, I had an opportunity to be a head coach for basketball before I became an assistant. Get it? Before I became an assistant under Jan Azar, you know, one of the best coaches in Georgia still. And, you know, she was very demanding. And Susie reminds me of Jan and vice versa. And so I went from being a head coach who was really, really young and, you know, kind of thought I had it all figured out. And I was running a K-12 program. And when I got an opportunity to work with Jan as an assistant, I learned so much more because the level of excellence was so much greater than what I had anticipated. And, you know, I see that in Susie and, you know, the legacy that she has left at Mercer University. I mean, it's tough. Filling her shoes was definitely tough. But that's what you want. You want for people, you know, when you leave, for it to be better than you found it, and hopefully have somewhat of a ripple effect, so that other people, other teams, other programs, student athletes, you know, just learn from you. And hopefully I've done some of that, you know, with my assistants. I always try to hire assistants that were better than me in certain areas, and at the same time trying to encourage them to be the best that they can be, not only for our student athletes, but also for themselves.
Yeah. And again, open follow-up question before I get to another main question. Then, Coach, I want you to ask some of your questions as well. I don't think everybody understands what demanding looks and feels like. So in your own words, what does demanding look and feel like for not just your coaches, but or not just your players, but your assistant coaches as well?
Again, I think I'm a much better coach now than I was when I first started. I think when my first head job was at Austin Peay, and I really had a hard time delegating. You know, I didn't think anyone could do it as well as I could. But I think now that I use Mercer as an example because I feel like I was a better coach there. But for my assistant coaches, I always ask them, do you want to be a head coach? Like, is your goal to be a head coach in college? And I ask my players the same thing. Do you want to be a pro? Like, you know, I think it's important to meet them where they are and not just assume that all of my assistant coaches wanted to be head coaches, because if they wanted to be a head coach, maybe I gave them different responsibilities if they wanted to stay an assistant coach, I wanted them to have great assistant coach skills. From a coaching head coaching perspective, you know, we would meet every Monday in the conference room, and I would have my list of about 15 to 20 things that I had thought about for the week or that morning, and then try to delegate to them. But also, if I asked someone to do something, I expected it to be done in a timely manner. I did not like to have to give people deadlines, and sometimes I did. And if you have to give someone a deadline, you have to remember what the deadline is. And so I just wanted people to be, but what I have learned is not everyone operates like I do. You know, we all have different personalities, different learning styles, different leadership styles. And so I had to learn that just because he or she didn't do it my way doesn't mean that that's the only way. From a coaching perspective for the players, you know, just being on time, being early, being respectful, being humble in our success. You know, I didn't want us to, as we became more successful on the Mercer campus, I did not want them to be entitled, you know, and I tried to show them what humility looks like and to be thankful and those types of things. So, but early on, I was probably not a whole lot of fun to play for, but see, I was okay. Like as a player, that's how I was coached. And I like that. I like to be challenged to, hey, you can't guard so-and-so. Okay, I play with Teresa Edwards at Georgia. You can't guard Teresa. I'll show you every day I can guard. Now, 5-time Olympian, I couldn't guard her, but I thought I could, you know. So just throw me the challenge of what I can't do. But I found now players don't want to be coached like that. They need to be loved, and you were great, and that was a great, you know, whatever. But demanding, I think Nicole said earlier, demanding but not demeaning. And I think sometimes early on, probably at Austin Peay, I was a little bit of a punk, you know, because I was not as secure in myself as I am now.
Yeah, no, I'm curious. Coach has allowed me to be her friend, which has been a great experience, and just getting to know her more, somebody I look up to and respect very much. But I really just want to know, like, you know, why did you, you know, stay in coaching? And I mean, you've been in it for a long time, and you're still coaching. I feel like you in different ways are coaching me up. Just by, you know, our weekly, sometimes, you know, bi-monthly phone calls. And I know you're doing that with other coaches as well, but why do you do what you do?
Well, I grew up in a small town in Tennessee, Mount Juliet, and girls basketball in the state of Tennessee is a big deal. And it was a big deal in our small hometown. And the coaches in my life were very, very, very important to me, starting in junior high or middle school, as they call it now. And when I was in junior high, I wanted to be a junior high coach. And when I went to high school, I said, oh, I'm going to be a high school coach. And then I went to college. No, I'm going to be a cop. You know, because I've been blessed to have so many great people in my life moving up. And I never thought about ever doing anything else. And when people say, what else? I can't even think about anything else that I would have wanted to have done. But again, I think that I have evolved because, you know, those coaches touched my life so much. When I first got into it at age 23, I'm like, I'm going to touch every life that I coach. And I thought I was going to change the world. I thought I was going to be Pat Summitt, you know, because she was the person in the state of Tennessee and in the country. What I found is you're not going to touch every life. You can try to touch every life, but not everybody wants to have that relationship that I had with my coaches. But at the same time, I think touching lives, here's a perfect example, and I don't want to go too long, but I just missed a player from my team at Austin Peay. I think it was after her freshman year. And this really happened. She found me and emailed me 20 years later. Her daughter was playing travel ball, and she had seen me in that big gym, and she emailed me and thanked me because of the person that she's become had I not done that to her, she would have not become. And that, I'm going to tell you what, never in my life would I have thought I would heard from that person again. And so that was like a defining moment in like, okay, I dismissed her, but somehow that rattled her cage a little bit. And now she's coaching or she's got a daughter that's playing ball. Then I got into the success of winning. You know, at Georgia, we won. At Austin Peay, we were not very good. And then we started dethroning Tennessee Tech, who was the team that you had to beat. And so now I wanted to climb the ladder and be an SEC coach. And then you got to Arkansas, and almost all that I felt like that mattered was winning. You know, I kind of lost sight of the touching lives aspect because I felt so much pressure to win in the SEC. And then you get to Mercer, and again, we're at the bottom of the SoCon. And so now I just want to win. But I think now, I guess I was touching lives along the way, even though I wanted to win. And now I'm hopeful I'll get another chance to coach again because I have such different perspective, you know, of what is important, you know, and maybe I'm a late bloomer. I think I've touched lives along the way, but at the same time, I can look back and say, man, I wish I hadn't have done A, B, and C. You can't take that back, but I think I've done the very, very, all you can do is the best you can at the time that you have. And I think I've done that. And I think why so long? And I talked to my college coach, Coach Landers, a lot. And he actually came to the Hall of Fame induction. And I was telling him about, you know, how many players were coming back for that. And he said, you know, the longer I've been out of it, the more important you guys have become to me. You guys being us, his players have become to him, you know? So I think sometimes we get so busy, we get so caught up in the rush of it all that we forget that we are one of the most important people in their lives at that time in their life.
Mm-hmm. I agree. Very wise person told me a long time ago that, you know, see my students and student athletes through a telescope, not a microscope, that, you know, eventually, you know, the seeds that you're planting, they're going to grow and they're going to blossom, but you may not be able to see it. And, you know, we tell the kids all the time not to have, you know, this need for instant gratification. But I think as adults, a lot of times we have to, you know, and coaches, we have to remind ourselves that we may not see, you know, the fruit of those seeds planted just yet, and to be patient with it.
Absolutely. Yeah. All super important things. the very key words of wisdom here. Coach, I know one of your questions, would you like me to ask some of your questions or do you want to jump into some of yours?
No, keep it rolling. Yeah.
Okay, you're talking to this coach. You're talking to that coach. Okay.
Oh, sorry. I'll be more specific. Coach Gardner, Coach Dixon. No, Coach gets me all the time because she's like, use your words. Use your words. Like, be more specific with your words. That's 100% correct. So, all right, Coach Dixon, and then I'll follow up with some of your questions. Coach Gardner, what keeps you up at night?
When I'm coaching. That was a really good question because, you know, it made me think. And that's one thing that I think sometimes you have to, I was listening to a podcast the other day and I take a lot of notes if I hear something and the words were pause and pay attention. Mm-hmm. And this year I've been doing that a lot. And that question really was a good question in terms of what keeps me up at night. If I'm in season, and I'll be honest with you, I'm going to do this from a basketball perspective, not a personal perspective. I'm worried about, did I prepare our players for time and score? I worry about time and score. I worry about lineups. I worry about those types of things. I'm worried about, did we prepare them enough? Did we over-prepare? But at the same time, these kids are going through life, and then there's certain times in their life when they have really hard stuff happening to them or to their family or in their family. And it's like, okay, how much do I want to, like some players wanted to, I've had, unfortunately, players whose parents have passed away while I was coaching them. And some of them wanted to talk about it, and some of them did not want to talk about it. So I had to figure out, navigate how to deal with the different personalities of those players and what they were going through. So those are the types of things, I guess, worrying, you know, maybe thinking about assistant coaches. Are they doing what I've asked them to do? You know, recruiting will keep you up in college. Recruiting will keep you up, and not just recruiting for the future, you know, keeping your own players there, you know, those types of things. So.
Got it. Coach Dixon, what keeps you up at night?
Very similar things, actually. you know, especially when I was in Atlanta, both as an assistant coach at Wesleyan, I'd say in the latter years, female student athletes started to, and their parents considered other places for them to play basketball. And definitely was a head coach at Holy Innocents when, you know, I felt like we experienced the high school portal before college really knew what a portal was. And so a lot of college coaches, you know, I hear them in the stories, they're like, you know, you don't understand, and definitely don't understand from the magnitude in the short period of time when, you know, kids are moving schools in the portal. But at the high school level, it's you're constantly trying to recruit your own, both from what just, you know, the K-12 school, from the time they're little, trying to kind of win their hearts so that you can develop the skills. And, you know, in general, just trying to do that and like Coach said, kids are so different. And especially between that 14 or 13 to 18 year old brain and heart, they are evolving so much. And so trying to, I'd say, more recruit their hearts, but also, you know, challenge them on some of the noise that they're hearing from the outside of people that really don't know everything that a high school experience can give them. You know, it's bigger than basketball in a lot of ways. So trying to prepare them to be as organized, you know, as prepared emotionally as they can, so they can be accountable for themselves and be advocates for themselves. That's tough. You know, did I challenge them in ways that's actually reaching them to help them improve, or am I challenging them in ways that is not helpful at all? And I would agree. I only have one assistant coach now at GPS, but am I helping them attain their goals? And then also, are they doing what we need as a program and a team so that, you know, my girls are able to attain theirs? And, you know, loved all the assistant coaches I had at Holy Innocents, but between, you know, the 5th through 12th grade program we had, at 16 coaches. And 16 coaches, that was a lot of people for me to manage. And I didn't realize it and was very grateful. But a lot of even the young volunteers we had for our 5th grade team, you know, wanted a lot of my time. And so learning how to manage that and still do my, you know, my assistant AD job and find time for parents that also need a lot of mentoring and support.
Got it. Okay. Coach Gardner, based off of what we're talking so far, what's going through our head, the other things we're thinking about, and in your opinion, like how many, in your experience, I'm sorry, how many hours do you put in versus how many that you're actually paid for? Like what does that dynamic look like?
You know, I don't turn it off except for sleep. So I've never even counted the hours, but I know one thing. I was never driven by the money. I actually was getting paid very, very well at Mercer. But I started out my first job, I was getting paid $19,500. So I wasn't doing it for the money. I never did do it for the money. So, You know, there's other coaches out there making like millions, 3 million, whatever. And I was talking to a coach at a Power Four school. I'm not going to say who it was, but we were sitting there and she was making a million. And she said, you know, I used to think we should get paid a million. Now I think we should get paid more. And I'm like, what? So it's perspective, I guess, you know, I mean, I don't need money. I'm not that type of person. So I just want to coach. And money has never driven me, you know. I guess it's nice, but you know, I get paid okay for coaching the game, for heaven's sakes. Compared to what other people do, like you know, school teachers and that type of thing, and nurses and those people that really are doing big stuff, you know, I think we get paid pretty daggone well in college, that is.
Agreed.
Got it. And within your experience, how have your non-negotiables either stayed the same or evolved over time?
I would say they've pretty much stayed the same. I used to not think about them that much, you know. I just assumed everyone had the same ones as me. But I think when I got a little bit wiser as a coach, you know, I really felt like it was important to state them out loud. You know, I think you have to entwine them within your daily life. I know some coaches try to use them every single day before practice, or you know, have team building type of things. But I think it's important that they know, like, what is going to keep you in my good graces and the team's good graces or the university's good graces, and what might get you dismissed from the team. I mean, I had a page in my team notebook that said ways to be dismissed. And basically there was, sometimes I would have to add them because people would do things that I never thought of them doing. But it kind of, for a head coach, you had to have it in writing, because if you needed to dismiss someone from the team, and it wasn't like trying to set people up, but you said, well, you know, you read this in your team notebook and you messed up. And so it didn't say you were definitely going to be dismissed. It says ways to be dismissed. So it's kind of an open-ended type thing. But I think mine have stayed pretty much the same. And it's kind of also for the way I live my life, too. Nothing wild and exciting out there, but pretty much important. One of my favorite songs Tim McGraw sings is Always Stay Humble and Kind. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of how I try to live my life as a human being. You want to know what they are for my players?
I love that, yeah.
Honesty is one. Simple, don't lie. Respect everyone. You know, we talk about respecting the guys that are getting their floors clean in the morning, doing that little scrub thing, you know, or the bus drivers or the hotel people, and then representing our program at all times. You know, I think it's important that professors don't think that the women's basketball team at Mercer were entitled. That was very important to me. I don't really enjoy coaching prima donnas. And there are a lot of prima donnas out there. And I was fortunate to coach one of the best players that's ever played at Mercer, and even in the SoCon, 3-time player of the year, Kalia Lawrence. And she was one of the most humble players I've ever coached in my life. And I like coaching people like Kalia Lawrence.
Coach, one of the things I've always admired about you is the way that you recruit your student athletes. You know, I've asked a couple of your players, you know, about the different personalities, but you know, spoke about Kalia. I know there's probably something that goes on in your mind. There's, you know, I don't know if it's like anything you've written down, like, hey, she checks all these boxes, but when you are recruiting student athletes, you know, what are you really looking for with those players?
You know, it's interesting. This is one area that I've evolved in. I've had someone working with me in our program at Mercer for the last probably six or seven years. And I really never thought about that question until she says, to me and my staff, what are you, like, she wanted my staff to know what I was looking for. Mm-hmm. And I never really verbalized that or wrote it down. And we had to have this conversation. I'm like, that is a really, really good question. Cause you know, you think you're just looking for the best players. And so what we did, we actually did have a checklist, you know, and we on a scale of 1 to 5, we would have to say, one of ours was toughness. Are you mentally tough? Are you physically tough? And then on a scale of, and you had to try to figure this out by watching them play or talking to their high school coach. But on a scale of 1 to 5, 5 being good, and then there was 5 of them, it was toughness, hard worker, athletic, which doesn't mean quick and fast, but are you an athlete? Do you have skill set? Do you have coordination? Skilled, like I like shooters. Are you skilled? Mm-hmm. And then basketball IQ. And then on a scale of 1 to 5, our coaches had to rank them. We did this when we first learned about this, we did it with our current team that we had at the time. And we're like, dang, we need to do a little bit better in this area. If we don't have, and leadership is 1 too. Leadership is 1 always on there. And if we didn't have a leader on our current team, we need to go out there and find and recruit a leader. And those are harder to find now. If we didn't have someone that was mentally tough, if we had less mentally tough players, we need to make sure we needed to bring in more mentally tough players. You know, the shooting one's pretty easy. You know, that if we don't have shooters, go find a shooter. But the intangible ones were the tricky ones. And so we did actually make that a priority. And this wasn't early in my career. This was later on, like I said, just about 6, 7, 8 years ago that we started doing this. And it's been a great help because now I can look at them, me, myself, from a different lens about what they bring to our program.
Right. Why? Well, do you think you were able to do that in your brain before you even articulated it and wrote it down on paper to share with your assistants?
I think I had it in my brain, but it wasn't as well thought out as it is now. Because what we did it together too. We all went home and wrote down what we thought was important to our program. And then we compared our notes. So I had like 3 assistants. And then we would compare our notes and see if we had anything that was the same on all of our pieces of paper. At the end of the day, mine trumped everyone else's, but I wanted to see what they thought was important to me too. Because if I'm always giving the information out, I'm not getting feedback from my assistant coaches to see how they're thinking. It's important to me to know how they're thinking, not for them just to, I don't want yes people. Oh yeah, okay. So she thinks being mentally tough is important. I must think that. No, some people didn't think that, right? Mm-hmm. Or maybe some people thought if my post coach might have thought something being physically tough was more important than my point guard coach thinking you need to have a higher basketball IQ. So all those things that I listed are different for the positions too. Like post players need to be A, B, and C, and your point guard needs to be E, F, G. You know, so that really opened my eyes to recruiting. And I think that's where I wish I'd known that, you know, at Austin Peay. Now, Austin Peay was different. The times have changed so much. Austin Peay, we had just great kids across the board, a bunch of Tennessee country girls, you know, and had hardly any problems at all. But now that times have changed, you kind of got to dig a little bit deeper, I think.
Yeah, I think, yeah, that's a really good follow-up question there as well, Coach Dixon. Like that was, it's great to hear the evolution and then hear the pieces that you've put in place over time, for sure. When we're going back and thinking about the non-negotiables and what you're spending the most time on, another kind of inlay is, you know, what narratives in your head that are you spending the most time on that are happening potentially during the season?
What narratives in my head?
Mm-hmm. This is Coach Dixon question. Can you clarify that a little bit more, Coach Dixon, or did she answer that already?
Yeah, I mean, just in general, I mean, I think you kind of answered it a little bit earlier.
What keeps me up at night? That one?
Yeah, because you expounded upon that. And you know, just the conversations, you know, you have at night with yourself, like, hey, did I do this? Did I not do this? How can I do this better? But I thought she answered that fantastic.
Okay, great. Awesome. Then going back to the recruiting piece, you were talking about what you're looking for in players. What are you looking for potentially in parents? Like what other, when you're looking at the entire scene, what are you looking at?
You know, that has so changed. As Coach Dixon talked about with the portal, you don't really get to know the parents in the portal, you know, and plus these guys in the portal are quote unquote adults because they might be a little bit older and you don't really have as much time to get to know them, much less the parents. Now, back in the day when you're just recruiting high school kids and you had all this time to get to know the families and that type of thing, you know, I've really never had issues with parents. You know, I don't know. And I've really never really paid attention to what type of parent they were. You know, I just felt like, okay, they got a daughter here that's been raised correctly. But, you know, there are certain parents that stand out as being, you know, I've never really had meddling parents, you know. The ones that stood out to me are the ones that would text me and say thank you, even like in the season. Or they would call me and say, hey, don't let so-and-so, my daughter, know I'm calling you, but she's having a hard time right now. But so I want me and you to work on this together to help her. But don't let her know that I called. But I wanted you to know that she's going through this type of thing. But in terms of what I'm looking for in parents as I'm recruiting them, their daughter, will they let me coach? You know, will they let me coach their daughter? Or are they going to be like out in high school game or travel ball, I'm watching, are they coach? Like, is their daughter looking up in the stands at their mom or dad getting coached from them? That's a red flag to me. Mm-hmm. And then are they, you know, are they helicopter parents, that type of thing? We don't need that. We need that their daughter had a chance to fail early in life and pick themselves up off the ground and figure that part out. And then on a recruiting visit, if the parents start complaining about the high school coach or they're complaining about the travel ball coach, that's a red flag to me because I'm like, okay, they're going to be complaining to me about these other people. What are they going to say about me to other people? Mm-hmm. So it's not anything I don't really dive deep into it, but in terms of, but there will be red flag. It won't be like, okay, is this a good person? I assume that they're good parents until proven guilty type thing. Does that make sense?
Yes.
I'm not looking for things. But if I see something like, I don't know about that one, you know, so, or a high school coach will say, hey, you don't want to mess with so-and-so's parents. If that is said to you, you need to take a detour.
Coach, you've mentioned several times that if a high school coach says, you know, whatever, do you like to have contact with a high school coach before offering a young lady a scholarship to your
program? My assistant coaches didn't like me because I would not offer on the first phone call. I had a reputation because there'd be some people like on that very first day, whatever that day was, let's say it was June 1st. And then you look on Twitter and everyone, I got an offer from 16 schools. I'm like, yeah, we only talked, like, we haven't been, you know, we just discovered you. We're not going to offer. And then the coaches, sometimes travel ball, mostly travel ball, sometimes high school, say, well, she's not going to visit your campus until you offer. I'm like, well, I don't want to offer until I get to know her better, you know? And so it's like a cat and mouse, but my assistant coaches handled me very well. They would say, well, you know, Coach Gardner, she won't offer until she gets to know the player. So they handled me even much to their chagrin because they wanted me to offer. But no, I am very much, I tended to lean more towards talking to the high school coaches, and my assistant coaches tended to talk more to the travel ball coaches. I don't know why that was for me, or is for me, but with the portal, it's a little bit more tricky. You try to talk to the coach at the school they're leaving, actually, if you know that person, if you know that they'll be honest with you. But in that situation, yeah, you try to do some background because you only have 2 or 3 days to make a quick decision. But yeah, I always try to talk to the person that's been in their life the most from a coaching perspective, for sure.
So with Kalia, I mean, how did you discover her? And
we almost messed that one up. They had come to our team camp when she was a sophomore, and Rhett Wiersbe was my assistant coach, my recruiting coordinator, and he had her on but she was a sophomore. And at Mercer, you don't really go that early in there. You don't recruit that early. Now, the Power Fours, you go back to, you know, 8th, 7th, 8th grade. But at that time, we weren't ready to – we were kind of new to Mercer. So she was on a list. And then Rhett got another job. And then we lost Kalia. Mm-hmm. And for some reason, one of my new assistant coaches said, hey, I want to go to this Christmas tournament. It's in Alabama. And I'm like – she kept begging me to go to it. And I said, okay, go. And so she discovered Kalia again. And then we got on it, and her mom said, well, where did y'all go? And we had to you know, tell her the truth that we had an assistant coach that left, and we lost her in the shuffle. But, you know, Kalia did not play travel ball. You know, she played at Kendrick. They ended up, you know, as you know, winning state. Mm-hmm. But it was interesting because I would go watch her play as much as I could, but most people that were recruiting her were mid-majors in the state of Georgia. Now, had Kalia been at my school, even as she was freshman of the year and then three-time player of the year, I would have lost her after her freshman year had we had the portal. We would have never had the 30-3 run that we had, the 27, being ranked in the top 25 in the country with the team that we had. We would have lost that team to the portal. So I'm so thankful that I was able to coach Kalia for 4 years and Sydney Means for 4 years and Amanda Thompson and that Rachel Self and that group that won back to back, because that would never have happened now. You know, Kalia would have been gone maybe after her freshman year, but mm-hmm. we found her, we lost her, we got lucky, and we almost lost her to another school. I'm not going to tell you who, but it wasn't even a good program in the state, but they had better dorms. She said that their dorms were better than ours. And I'm like, wow, if we'd have lost this great player to the dorms, that would have been pretty sad.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Kalia was very, very fun to watch. And it was so interesting to me as an assistant at the time at Wesleyan. When I got to see her in the Macon Coliseum, I'm like, wow, this young lady is special. And you were there. And your staff, it was amazing to watch her. Yeah, and it's going back to the portal, and you know, I hope more and more coaches tell the story of what it means, like, to, you know, and especially the student athletes, what it means to stay at a place and win multiple championships like that, and tell that story. Because I think, you know, hopefully we can get a few more, you know, student athletes that decide to stay and create that legacy. You know, it's special to be able to come back. And I've got former student athletes that they decided to leave for different reasons. And some of them were really good reasons, their personal reasons of why they left. But we've got a couple of them that are like, man, like, sort of been amazing to be able to graduate with a diploma from Holy Innocents or a diploma from Mercer, you know. And so that's just an important thing to continue to say, because young people, their frontal lobe is not fully developed. And sometimes parents who've not had the same experience, they don't know how to educate the student athlete when making those tough decisions. And so things like this with podcasts and people hearing it, you know, straight from, you know, your mouth is important.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. Good points there, Coach. Also along the lines of the recruiting part, what types of questions are you asking the parents and the players to get them to know them a little bit better?
You ask them about themselves first and foremost. You know, I would start, you know, I would not, this would not be in the same room as the parents. I would ask them, are they more like their mom or their dad? If they had both parents, I would say, are you more like your mom or your dad? And that would open up a trail of questions. Mm-hmm. If they said, you know, well, I'm like my mom in this way and my dad in this way, that was good, because then I could say, well, how are you like your mom? And that would let me know how her mom was, and it would let me know how she is. And then she liked her dad. So I'd ask her that. That was one of my best questions, honestly, to ask that, because that would make them dive into their upbringing type thing. I'd ask them if they wanted to be a pro. Do they want to play pro basketball? Not necessarily WNBA, or do you want to play overseas? I always like to recruit pros, people that wanted to be pros, because I could dangle that carrot in front of them and say, why are you not in the gym more? You know, the pro, why are you not eating correctly? Why are you not doing your rehab? You know, you know, this is what professional athletes do. You know, I'd ask them how do they want to be coached? You know, especially when they actually came to the campus. But I'd ask them how they wanted to be coached, because some people say, oh, I want to be coached hard. I want to be da-da-da-da, you know, and some people say, you know, I'm really better if you bring me off to the side, you know. So if they became close to an assistant coach, I would watch that, you know, and maybe let that assist in the recruiting process. And then when they came on campus, became a player for us, maybe that assistant coach was their academic coach too. And then that coach could, you know, dive. So just ask them a bunch of stuff about themselves. The parents, I would let them more ask questions of me. You know, I didn't necessarily ask them as many questions. I'd say, do you have any questions? That would be my question. Do you have any questions? You know, and I wanted to know what was important to them. You know, then I would say, hey, this would be one I would ask the parents. So, do you have any reservations about your daughter coming to Mercer or wherever I was?
That's a great question. What would
be your reservations? And they might say something, you know, it, whatever they would say, like, for example, with Kalia, the dorms, I'm like, well, my gosh, we've got other, we have other situations there. You know, we have, when you become a sophomore, you don't have to live in the freshman, you know, or if a parent says, well, I'm concerned about whatever they're concerned about, or you already have, 2 point guards. How is my daughter going to fit as a point guard? Well, I played more than one. I want all my guards to be able to handle the ball. I'm going to play the best 3 guards that we have, and it could be 3 point guards at the same time. So you got to know what might keep them from coming, and then you get to sway your answer to a direction that makes them think, oh, yeah, that'll work, you know, instead of them being apprehensive about the situation. Mm-hmm.
Love that last one.
Really good questions. Yeah. Any follow-ups with that subject area, Coach Dixon?
No, I do love that last question. Like, what are the reservations? And then for that internal narrative that they might have, I just think it's very wise, because whenever there's gaps in communication, people, you know, kind of make up their own answers, and they may not be correct. And it's good also for them to be able to affirm what they already think they know. Coach, we're kind of coming to the last part of this, and I know you said there were some questions that you really liked that we sent before.
No, these have been great. These are great. All the questions have been great. You know, so y'all keep rolling. I'm better at y'all asking these questions. We're doing okay.
Okay. Then I think what we'll end off with all of you, maybe one, and then Coach, if you want to have one, and it's more in the direction of self-development, and we're going to kind of envelope it all in one. So when you're looking to get better yourself as a, let's look at the leadership standpoint specifically, what do you do? Like, what are your feedback loops? Who are you connecting with? What books are you reading? How do you go about making yourself better?
Well, you're going to be very disappointed with what the books I'm reading. I have not read a leadership book. I used to read them when I was a GA, and when I first got into coaching, I would just devour them. But I haven't read I still have them in my bookshelf because they let me look like smart. But I haven't read a leadership book in forever. But what I do is I watch leaders. Like I love to watch press conferences. I love especially the college football playoffs that's going on right now. What a wide variety of leaders that are coaching right now. I have some mentors. You know, Andy Landers is someone that I still call to this day. And then Lynn Dunn, who is with the Indiana Fever, ironically coached at Austin Peay way back before I did, but our paths have crossed, and she is a brilliant mind. I never listened to podcasts until this year. And then I got introduced to one when Jane Goodall passed away. Someone just sent me a Jane Goodall podcast, and it was called Wiser Than Me. And the interviewer is interviewing women that are 70 or older that are famous, but the premise is these women are wiser than me, and I've learned so much listening to them because of you think these famous people have had it made, and you listen to the struggles that they've had, you know, as women or whatever, and then I have someone that has worked with our program that I think that has helped me, as I said, figure out how to coach players. And she really challenges me as a coach, thinking outside the box, thinking about things that I really never have. Like, for example, the question about what types of players do we want to recruit, you know, and then just coaching differently, you know, me evolving as a coach and not being Andy Landers Jr. and being more positive. Realizing, you know, what our players need versus what I need, you know. But, you know, if I see something like, you know, on TV that's interesting, like if I'm just browsing, I see something on TV that I feel like might be interesting. But here's another strange example. Like I'm taking a pottery class right now. And I took a pottery class a few months ago, and I had the owner of the pottery place gave the first class. And he went around the room and had us all introduce ourselves and tell us something interesting about ourselves. I took a class last night by a different guy. He went right into teaching. He did the whole pot he taught the whole method. And the first guy taught the part method. Like we all had our little clay and we centered it and we all centered it. And then we did the next thing. But the guy last night did the whole thing. I'm like, oh my gosh, I would never remember this had I not taken that first class. So just me, as I was driving home last night, I'm like, wow, those are two different styles of teaching and leadership. And one of them was better for me than the other. Mm-hmm. And but it was interesting I'm more observant, I think, now just by watching other people than reading books. Yeah. Forgive me, but...
No, you know, I mean, a lot of people, I think you hit the nail on the head. People learn differently. And you kind of just gravitate towards what works best for you. But ironically, you've written a book.
It's not a leadership book. I mean, it's a children's book that some of my SEC friends have read to their team, like Christy Curry at Alabama. Told me, she said, I read my book. Like when I was at Florida, she said, I read my book to your, I mean, I read your book to my team before the game. she really did. So
that's awesome.
But, yeah, I wrote a children's book. Yeah. Yeah.
So it's called 1-2-3 Team.
Right.
What inspired you to do it? Did you always want to write a children's book? Like, how did that come to fruition?
Okay, well, I actually read a book that made me want to write the books. That's what, like when I was reading, my sister has five kids, and she homeschooled. She's way smarter than me. She homeschooled for a long time, not when I got in high school, but she would always, like, and so I would read children's books to my nieces and nephews, and I'm like, wow, this children's book is pretty deep. I mean, it's supposed to be cute, but I'm like getting a message out of this children's book. And so my sister started giving me a children's book every year for Christmas. So I have a a library of very intellectual children's books. And so I read a book by Jane Pauley, Life Reimagined. It was on the bus. I was at Mercer. I was on a road trip, and I was reading on the bus. It was all these people that had been very successful, doctors, lawyers, like they had been there. They were like your age now. but the question that was posed was, what would you do if you didn't have to be paid? Now, these people, like the doctor, he retired from being a doctor and went to be a comedian. This other person sold their house and bought an RV and just went cross country in an RV and just did something. Okay, well, now I still have to coach, but what would I do if I didn't have to coach to make money, right? I'm like, I would write a children's book. And that's what got the trigger going. One, from my sister giving me books, but two, Jane Pauley writing this book that I read. And then I started writing what I thought were books just in my spare time at home. I would just, an idea would come and I would take notes and I'm like, I don't know. And so, but then I was fortunate so then I started doing research, you know, buying how to write a children's book. And I found out that, oh my gosh, finding a publisher is the hardest thing to do. And then I went to the library at Mercer, and I checked out about 20 children's books. And the librarian, not the head librarian, but the guy that checked me out said, what are you going to do with those? You're going to read them to your players? It really, really made me mad. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to say, like, Julia, in A Pretty Woman, Julia Roberts, she said, big mistake, huge. You know, that line when she said, yeah. And I wanted to say to that guy, big mistake, huge. I wanted to go back to him and say, this is why, when I wrote the book. But I was fortunate that Mercer University Press, actually, they had never published a children's book in the history of Mercer University Press, but they said, we think that it has to sell. We think it'll sell because of, you know, your success and you being a coach. And they printed it. And it was one of the best moments of my life. I went back over there and they handed me the real book, you know, and it was like, this is crazy. This is like winning a championship, right? It was a feeling that I didn't expect to have, but it was one of the coolest moments. And we ended up, Matthew Mitchell, when he was at Kentucky, he gave a children's book to every first grader in Lexington. Now the man is wealthy, you know, he made more. So I said, well, if he can do it for Lexington, I can at least do it for Macon. So 1 year we gave it to every first grader, 32 elementary schools that I went to, and read the book and handed it out one by one to every single first grader in the city of Macon. So that was a special thing to do. And it was one of the highlights of my life, actually, was to do that. So.
Well, being from Gray, Georgia, near Macon, I've heard many people talk about what you did. It means a lot. It's one of the reasons why I like you so much. You're so willing to give back. And so genuine. So,
yeah, absolutely. All right, Coach Gardner, Coach Dixon, we're at time here. Coach Dixon, any last comments or questions or things you'd like to say to wrap things up?
Coach, just thank you for everything you're doing for women's basketball, and then extending your impact to others by writing the book. You know, your Sunrise with Susie that you did at Mercer University, that I know so many people loved, and just being who you are. I'm grateful to have you in my life, and thank you for your time. I appreciate your friendship.
Thank you, guys. This has been great for me to pause and pay attention and to think and make, you know, I think, you know, you ask me, what do I do with recruits? Well, you ask questions. Well, you all have asked me some really good questions that have made me think. So I appreciate you asking me these questions.
I appreciate you, Coach Gardner, for speaking with us today and sharing your wisdom. Like, this is great. I'm sure this will impact a lot of people in such a positive way. So again, thank you so much for who you are and for your time.
Thank you.
All right. Thanks, Coach.
All right, guys.